All right, Reg, you ready to go? No lollygagging today. We've got a guest. We got to be on time. So let's go. I'll give you the three S's. I'll give you the countdown. You give me the music, and we'll do a podcast. All right? You ready to go? Thumbs up. The instrument is in fine form, so let's do it. Star, smile strong. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Where else would we be? But as you know, as a regular listener, your responsibility does not end there. Listening is good, but it's not extra credit. So get out there. Spread the word. Send a message. Send a link to your friends, to your family. Anyone who listens to a podcast, tell them that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion, and of course, that little extra effort might just get you into heaven. And don't forget, if you like what you hear, go to WGNRadio.com, go to the podcast section, go into the prompt for this podcast. In fact, they've actually redesigned the WGN Radio page. It looks all spiffy. So go in there, hit the prompt, and you will find, I hope, you're supposed to, at least in theory, all previous podcasts. There's certainly a boatload in there. There should be at least 305. 305 should be in there. So that only means one thing. Welcome to episode 306. 306. And I'm happy to announce that we've got a guest today. Regular pop culture club contributor Emily Arminetti is on with us. Hello, Emily.
Hey, Jim.
Good to talk to you.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
Whenever something happens in the pop culture world, you are on my bat phone.
Oh, yeah. Did something happen?
Oh, I don't know. are you taking a line from Amy Schumer?
Yeah,
did something happen exactly. While I was away
getting
out of that Superman or Spider-Man outfit?
I don't know what you're talking about.
There seems to be a change in the mood here.
Yeah.
So, yes, it was, wow, the day the earth stood still. ironically, last week in episode 305, I was talking about how I felt that the Oscars – really, up to this point, I've been talking about this for many years and with Emily, and we've had debates on this. I've felt that over the last several years, the Oscars, the Academy Awards, have really begun to lose their luster and to have almost felt irrelevant, certainly over the last couple of years with COVID. The movie industry itself has been so impacted that it almost felt like, why are we bothering? Because nobody is really seeing movies, not out of disinterest. To some extent, that's the case, but no one's seeing movie because they couldn't go to a theater. And, and now, of course, there's more options. First run films coming to the home through streaming, but still, it does seem like there is a little apathy and that the movie business as a whole, aside from your superhero or your kid movies, really, nobody is really rushing to theaters except for action films, superhero films, or, animated kid films. So why are we even having the Oscars? And that was basically the thrust. I was like, I just remember, and we've talked about this, and you've said this too, that, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, for movie fans, the Oscars were our Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was thinking about this the other day because I was listening to another podcast where they were pointing out.
What?
Well, no, I listened to your podcast. People can listen to more than one podcast. Everyone is a winner, Jim.
Oh.
It's okay.
I didn't know the betrayal.
Yours is the first one.
Oh, yeah.
But you only have one a week.
Boy. Wow. Okay.
Anyway, yeah. But they were kind of talking about, this kind of resonated with me, does anybody even remember what won Best Picture last year? And it really made me think because
I know I asked my wife that last night. We were talking about this. I said, for instance, what won last year? And she didn't remember.
Right.
What and won 2 years ago? What won? What won 2 years ago?
Yeah, and I know, and I think, and he's like, will people even still be talking about? We don't even remember what won last year, let alone are we going to be talking about it decades from now? Now, I think back to the mid-90s, I distinctly remember, to this day, I'm still mad that Pulp Fiction didn't win Best Picture, but of course, Pulp Fiction lost to Forrest Gump.
Did it really? Wow.
Yeah, it did. And I remember being so annoyed because having seen both films, I actually really did think that Pulp Fiction was the better film. But I also understood why.
Yeah,
it was see why Forrest Gump, because Forrest Gump was so epic and, prolific.
But to your point, think about this. I would argue that 20 years later, more people talk about Pulp Fiction than they do about Forrest Gump.
Well, probably. But the fact is, we still talk about those movies.
Right.
People still think about them and remember them and maybe have even seen them. I mean, I know I've seen...
What was the Oscar winner 2 years ago? I'll throw that quote. Do you remember? Right. Well, I don't remember.
No, I don't remember. So this is the thing. It's like,
wasn't it Parasite? Was it Parasite?
It might have been Parasite, but I mean,
I don't know.
Parasite could have. I mean, Parasite definitely won Best Picture. I couldn't tell you what year.
Yeah, so maybe it was
somewhat recent. So that's the thing. It's like, it does feel very different than it used to, and the point that this podcaster was making, and I was like, yes, this is exactly, he literally took the words right out of my mouth. It's like, this is the best picture this year, but are these great films?
Well, and I've been screaming at that
when
as
you
well.
Put them up against, and you watch, they trotted out Francis Ford Coppola and, Al Pacino and Robert De Niro. And I thought that was kind of weird. We can talk about that. But, The Godfather, okay? That is something people will never stop talking about, those films. Yeah. And, we've just moved on to a different time where it doesn't feel
because they're
making great films anymore.
Well, it's not – that I agree with, and that was part of what I talked about last week. I think Hollywood – because the problem is Hollywood itself has sold out. They have – They don't have the drive to make great movies anymore. They are just trying to make popular movies. There is a huge pandering now to the masses, and it's not just Hollywood. It's everything. I mean, I don't know if you're a big sports fan or not, but over the last several months, baseball is, changing its rules and wanting to add all these different things because they're not getting the same television ratings. And it's like, either you like baseball or you don't.
Yeah.
And by continuing to change its rules and to change what really made it great to just appeal to the flavor of the month, you are not being true to the sport itself. And you're only opening yourself up to it. So how are we going to change it in 10 years from now when tastes change again?
Right.
And so I think with films, sadly, COVID certainly put a spotlight on this. But I really believe that that now what you've seen as to who is going to theaters now, I think the majority, even after COVID, you will see very few dramas. And surprisingly, even romantic comedies are not doing well, which was always a staple.
Yeah.
Especially with your generation. but even that, those kind of movies, people are watching those at home. The only movies that are making any real money that are actually bringing some people back to theaters are your Spider-Man and your Batman and your James Bond. Or your Encanto, so it's animated and it's superheroes. It's aimed at little kids and big kids, kids who are 12, and then sadly, all the Arrested Development adults who are 50 years old and still kids. They still haven't matured out of their comic book years and probably never will. So that's it. But I was just thinking about the other day. Where can you think? What kind of money would a movie like Kramer versus Kramer make today?
Oh, I know.
Well, nothing.
That's I know.
And a great film. Great film, great acting, story, everything about it. Kramer versus Kramer with Meryl Streep and Dustin Hoffman about a divorced family would not have a chance today in today's world. It was the best picture. It was a huge hit. It wouldn't even take a blip on the radar screen in today's world. And people flocked to see that film at theaters. It wasn't just like, oh, it's an artsy film. Not at all. That was a mainstream hit. And I don't see in today's world. So my point is, the Oscars are doing the same thing like baseball is. They're pandering to the ratings. They're pandering to the audience. You know, we've seen them, you know, expand the category so that more popular films, you know, to your point, this is about, the Oscars are meant to highlight the best, not the most popular, the best of the year.
Right.
And I believe that they are succumbing to the pressures of ratings, and now even the ratings haven't been there the last couple of years. So you tell me. I've been screaming to you about how there shouldn't be any hosts, how I've been saying this. I think you've been holding out hope, because you, for whatever reason, you're still an optimist. Well, I don't know why.
I don't mind the host. I mean,
no, but I'm just saying is that you have been clinging to I love the Oscars. Now, after the last couple of years and the other night, are you still there? Or have you come to the dark side, Luke?
Well, I mean, look, I'm still going to watch. And honestly, it's
See, I don't think
night.
Here's the thing. Like, well, I don't think I'm going to watch. I didn't watch it live. I was not in town. I was at an event. So I actually couldn't watch it. But I'll be honest with you. I don't really know if it's that's what I really want to talk about today. Are they irrelevant? Why is this show still on? I don't see what no one's seeing the movies. We're having street fights now on stage. What does this represent?
Well, I mean, I think they're relevant to me. But again, like you said, I'm an optimist and I still like the Oscars. But I think the thing is, like, these awards shows got so boring and so dull, and like, it's all very self-congratulatory. And I think that is part of also why people are moving away from, it's a combination of the lack of, inspiring films and what's happening in the film industry. And then it's also this, they're just getting so boring. I mean, remember when, what's his name? Roberto Benigni, was that his name? When
he jumped
on the chair and ran around and whatever, exciting things like that used to happen, which, gives me conflicted feelings about what happened the other night, because it's like, on one hand, I mean, I think what Will Smith did was awful. I mean, it was like really horrifying to watch.
Yeah, it was. It was abhorrent. It was terrible.
But I mean, honestly, the sad question is this going to make people, are people suddenly going to be like, oh, I might miss something if I don't,
Yeah, but you know what? And that's a valid point. But my question is, what are we missing? I mean, do I need to see another guy assault someone on television?
Because that's
what happened.
Well, right. And that is my main, it's just more the point that when unexpected things happen, sometimes people gravitate.
Oh, no, I understand that. But my point is, what we're gravitating to.
Because honestly, I wish I hadn't seen that. I really hated watching that.
Yeah.
I mean, I almost, it was so hard to watch. And then it was also hard to it's hard to think about it after the fact, too, because the entire evening.
Oh, yeah.
Is now about that.
Oh, here's the thing. Perfect example. You're exactly correct. Okay, I was at a concert. I came back. I call my wife up, and she tells me about what happened. We talked for a half hour, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hung up. I never asked. She never told me about what was Best Picture.
Right.
We didn't talk about any of the awards. I didn't find. I mean, my curiosity, because this was such a big story. To your point about, are we attracted to it because something happened? I didn't ask. This is the same guy, as I said on the podcast last week, who used to write up envelopes with my picks and type them up and give them to her and open them while they were being opened on TV. That's how into this I was. And here, for a half hour, we talked about the Academy Awards that just finished, and I didn't ask her, and she didn't tell me any of the winners.
Right. Well, and this is the thing. And it's like, in the very first instance, I have to say, like, I really feel bad for Chris Rock. I mean, the man was assaulted, like, on stage.
And there's and nobody, you know, is coming to his defense.
Well, nobody's coming to his defense. And I think this is a complicated situation, right? Because he made a joke. It was in very poor taste. But also because it was in poor taste because we now know, if we didn't already know, that Jada Pinkett Smith has shaved her head because she suffers from alopecia. And that is, you know, something that, from what I've read, like, you know, people really struggle with that emotionally as well as physically. And so clearly this cut very deep. However, you know, in the first place, Chris Rock is a comedian, and, you know, there is somewhat of a social contract with comedians that they do sort of walk that line. They do.
Hey, Amy Schumer made a joke. She joked about Aaron Sorkin.
Right. Yeah. Well, they
did. He come up and hit her?
Well, right. They do. And this, they do say things like that happens pretty regularly that are considered offensive. They walk that line all the time.
Could you imagine if Don Rickles, what if Don Rickles was at this thing?
Well, sometimes they get canceled for things like that, right? Like, look at Kathy Griffin.
Right.
She never really bounced back from that Trump thing.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
And that, I don't even think that was even comedy when she was doing that. Now, the Chris Rock joke, it wasn't even a good joke.
It was
a
terrible joke.
I question how, I didn't even get the joke, and I was around, you know, 30 years ago for G.I. Jane. I mean, how many people, it was such an obscure reference anyway.
Yeah.
But the thing is too, that I question, and maybe some people are questioning now or should be questioning, you know, I don't know that Chris Rock knew that Jada Pinkett Smith suffered.
I don't think he did. I think he saw a bald head.
Now, does that make it any less hurtful for her? Not really, but it still doesn't make it okay. I mean, like, I think in any case, even like, no matter what, they were both wrong, right? Like, he made a dumb, tasteless joke. It was a hurtful joke, as it turns out. We now know, deeply hurtful. But also, Will Smith, you can't just go around punching.
And if
people,
you
right?
have a problem,
and I have wondered. You see, what if Don Rickles had been there? I wonder now. What if that had been a sound mixing guy who walked up and punched Chris Rock in the face?
Yeah.
Would he have been allowed to return to his?
Well, no. Well, like, there's so many things wrong with this scenario.
So
but the first thing is that if you have a problem, I mean, Will Smith, we know now, is he's disturbed.
Well, he seems like he's going through some stuff.
Yeah, there's some problems here. But my point is, nobody in his group, no one as far as security involved, did anything to de-escalate this problem.
Well, they say Denzel Washington.
I mean, physically.
After the fact.
I'm saying physically. Well, there should have been somebody in his group when he stood up. Somebody should have grabbed him by the arm.
Well, I don't think people, you know, so a lot of the analysis, and even at the time, I rewound it several times because I was like, was that even real? Or was that like a stunt?
Well, I think, yeah.
So, like, I think in the moment, well, first of all, I don't think people thought he was going to physically assault him. But I think also in the moment, you know, and this happens at these award shows, I think people thought this was a bit. I don't think they realized it was serious until he returned to his seat and was yelling and swearing.
Yeah.
And I think then they really realized, because you can see poor Lupita Nyong'o sitting in the shot the whole
time. Yeah, right, looking, yeah.
And you can see her go from like laughter, almost nervous, oh, the realization that, oh, wait, this isn't a bit. Like,
well,
this
plus,
is really
I think the reason, like, if you remember, if you said, because I've reran it many times too, if you look at it, Chris Rock is in no way protecting himself.
Well, because he's not,
this is my point. I think Chris Rock thought, and to your point about this, you thinking either it's a bit, or it's going to be some kind of a, you know, maybe he walks up. Here's what I would, if I was Chris Rock, because he goes, and he was laughing.
Yeah, right.
He probably thought he was going to come up to him and maybe shake his finger in his mouth, like, you know,
right,
his face,
exactly.
Like, you naughty little boy.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
Don't do that. Or, you know,
or say something.
Or say, you know, okay, you got one. And I'll, right. you know, the next time, and you'll joke about it and sit down. So I think he was completely surprised and shocked. It was shocked before. I think he was completely, you know, disheveled and shocked after it happened.
Oh, totally flustered.
Flustered. And then when he's yelling at him.
This is really real because Chris Rock could barely pull himself. And rightfully so. I mean, I would think after you've been, I thought it was a punch when I first saw it.
Yeah.
But whatever, you've been struck in the face.
Now.
You've been invited there to present. He's a former host of the Oscars.
Right.
Okay. He's been.
He's a friend of theirs. And he's a friend of theirs.
Well, I'm not sure how friendly.
Well, they both, you know, well, I'm just saying is that they both. You know, a few years ago, they both boycotted the Oscars because of the lack of nominees.
Yeah.
They were kind of united in that front.
Chris Rock hosted that year, the Oscars So White year, that Jada Pinkett Smith announced that she was. He made a joke about it in his.
Right. But I think there was another year. But there's been several years like that.
But here's the other thing, too. It's like so you in some way. And you're right. Not a lot of people have been defending Chris Rock. And I think there is a lot of nuance there because we don't know that he knew that she had this condition.
No, I don't think he did.
No. And but also, you know, that and then that aside, it's like all of the other people who won. First of all. I would say Questlove in the first instance because his category was the one that was
I know.
Chris Rock could barely get the words out.
I know.
Who the heck? Like an hour later, I was trying to remember who even won that category.
Right. Oh,
you know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
So you know, all of the people who were there, who were nominated, the people who won, you know, you have someone who actually made history there, Tony Kotzer from Coda.
Right.
You know, the guy
the first
who won
deaf
Best
guy.
Supporting Actor.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean that man made history, and the whole
it's all obliterated. Oh yeah, no, like I said.
And so
yeah.
I do think, and I mean, I guess Will Smith, in the moment when he was accepting his award, apologized to the Academy and to the other people there. But like, this really is. I mean, he really did take that night away from himself and from everybody else.
Oh yeah, well, not only that. I mean, first of all, what's interesting, I'd never heard of this, and I mean, I've been around. You know, I was alive when it happened, and I was aware of it. I saw it. I was watching it as a little kid. But apparently, this is my point. So, you know, you can argue that maybe they thought it was a bit and that's why they let him go up there. But, you know, there should have been, there was no security at all.
Yeah.
At all. There was not a hint of him being stopped or at all at any kind of thing, whether, you know, and the thing is that people say, well, like you said, well, maybe it was a bit. Okay. Well, then if it was a bit, then security would have been told, okay, look, you know, he's going to walk up to the stage,
right.
so don't stop
yeah.
him. If right. if he walked up to the stage, then somebody is supposed to be there. Somebody, there's, I don't see, there was no, I don't see there's any security there anywhere.
Here's my point. They have it.
Well, here's my thing. I just read this the other day, apparently, and I wasn't aware of this, when Marlon Brando, ironically 50 years ago, When the film was probably the next year, but it was still, that's when the movie came out in 72. When Marlon Brando won for The Godfather and he sent up, a Native American to accept his award and talk about the injustices that the Native Americans have gone through. And you're aware of that, right?
Yes.
And he sent that, the woman up there. What I've never heard is when she went up there, John Wayne, who was an ultra conservative, John Wayne was so angry that this was happening that he got up and he was going toward the stage.
No, really, to stop her?
To stop her or do something. Mm-hmm. And he was restrained by security.
Right.
And so this is my point. You know, there was no security here. There was no, there. You know, and then the other side of the coin is, okay, let's pretend we thought it was a bit. It was clear after he hit him and after he was yelling at him and swearing at him that this was not a bit. And right. this was a man who was out of control. Because if you saw when he was saying, you know, don't put my wife's name in your mouth, though his eyes were, that was rage.
Right.
That wasn't. He's not that good of an actor. Let's not forget. He's still the Fresh Prince of Bel Air.
Oh, no. Well,
you I'm know. Just joking. No, my point is that
Tom,
was real.
Tom Hanks is still a bosom buddy.
I know, right? Yeah. No, my point is that was rage. That was real. And so if you let's, I'll give you he goes up to the stage and we didn't know what to expect. Was he just going to go wave his finger at him or make a little joke?
Right.
I'll give you that. But when he sat down and was screaming expletives and was in a rage, he should have been escorted out of the room. Because at that point, he is a threat to Chris Rock again, because he could have run right up there again.
Yeah.
Or he's a threat to the people around, or he's a threat to that thing. And I'll be honest with you, if you want to make some real news about, wow, will people watch again? To be honest with you, he should have been escorted out of the building. And when he went, because, you know, they don't know who's going to win, right? There's only those people from Ernst & Young who know who's going to win.
Right.
But if you want to really know what should have happened there, he was a threat to that entire room. And he should have been escorted out. And when he won, they should have said, the winner is Will Smith. He is unable to accept his award. Because the takeaway from this is what I'm seeing in this bigger picture. We can all debate all these, and everybody has over the last week or so.
Mm-hmm.
What bothers me the most is, once again, our society. And that's the problem here. I'm always looking at big kind of issues and lessons learned. No accountability. No consequences. You just said, and you are correct.
There are consequences for certain people.
Well, but you know what? But you know what? You're sending a message. You're sending a message to everybody who's watched that now this is okay. You know, this all started with this whole idea. You know, Kanye West, remember when he got up at the Grammys or whatever the thing was. and did the same kind of BS about Taylor Swift, and he made it about him as opposed about the event. And this really started 30 years ago when Spike Lee became this big at the basketball games, you know, walking the sidelines and screaming at refs and high-fiving players. You're a spectator. You're invited. You're not a part of it. And this has all progressed to the point where now there is an entitlement, and especially by certain people who live in that rarefied air, that no rules apply to them, that they can do anything they want, and they've seen others do it and get away with it. And that my point is that we are sending a message to anyone, not only other actors, but everyone else, that you know what? You can get away with this. You said, and you were correct, he stole the moment from himself and the event. He should have been, what should have happened was, he shouldn't have been allowed to steal it. They should have stole it from him. He should not have been able to have accepted his award. He was nominated, and you know what? You just did a horrific thing, and you are punished. So if you win, you know what? This is the biggest night of your life, and you screwed it up. You don't get to give your speech. And that would have sent a message that this is not tolerated.
Right. Well, so the thing is, like, you know, he created what he said it in his speech. It was a complicated moment.
That speech is irrelevant to me. I don't care what you say. That speech is BS. He's talking about the Lord. It's irrelevant.
I know, but I think here's
actions speak louder than words.
These people live in rarefied air, and I think while an everyday average guy who walks up to another guy and assaults him like that would have real consequences.
Of course.
There is a reason why. But the thing is, too, there's also, I think, it takes a certain person to make it in that industry and to make it to the level that Will Smith has. And I think there's a lot that goes into that. I mean, you have to be tenacious. You have to be certain thing. You have to be able to get out there and hustle. You have to take rejection. But I think also there is an element of narcissism with a lot of.
Oh, you think, what are you talking industry. About? That's all it is.
Well, and so
this is the height of narcissism
too. I mean, that plays part in it too. It's about making the whole thing about him.
Yeah, but now, we have allowed narcissism. Narcissism has been a lot. Narcissism today is celebrated in, you know, there was a time when you were told not to show off, that you were called a hot dog. Now our culture celebrates narcissism. We encourage narcissism.
Right. Well, it's certain generation. I mean, there's a generational thing that happens.
Well,
with that,
but they're running. But anybody who's from 14 to 30 has been raised on this, that you are the greatest thing on earth and anything you want to do is right. And you should bring as much attention to yourself by doing whatever you can do. And it is rewarded. Reality TV has rewarded it. TikTok has rewarded it. YouTube has rewarded it. That's the message here.
Yeah. Now, as far as the Academy is concerned, you know, because I do, I mean, I question, like, if this had just been a sound mixer, they probably would have been escorted out of the building, even if they were a nominee, right? But the Academy, so the Academy said nothing about it, I don't think, that night. But the next day, they issued a statement. They condemned his actions.
And they're still, you know, and they're still said, debating whether they're going to either take his award away or, you know.
Well, they, I don't
which
think
they're not going to do.
I mean,
they're not going to do that.
I don't think they're going to do that. But they said there's going to be a formal review and they're exploring further action and consequences. Now, it's possible that they could suspend him from the Academy, which would have implications for him, you know, like for whatever amount of time, if that's the route they go. You know, he might not be eligible for nomination for any, you know, of any films that come out during that time. He may not be able to attend the awards. He may, you know, so there could be some consequences. I mean,
are those consequences that would really alter anyone else's behavior in the future? Oh, you won't be able to go to the Oscars next year? Oh, big deal.
I know. And I think that this all suggests that he, you know, I mean, it doesn't suggest he got away with it in the moment. You know, he got away with it in the moment. The question is he going to get off scot-free? Is he going to completely get away with it? Because, you know, it's been a couple days and like, I don't know. I mean, I've seen footage of him dancing at the after parties.
He got a standing ovation at the Vanity Fair party an hour later.
Well, this is the other thing that is disheartening about it, because it isn't just about Chris Rock, even though, yeah, that's horrible that he was assaulted like that. You know, it did take away from all the other nominees and all the other winners that night and everybody who works hard to put that whole thing together. But then also, you know, right after that happened, I mean, he did jump out of his seat and he sort of forced a handshake on Questlove as Questlove was coming up to the stage. And I thought that was really strange. It's like, after you've just done this, you might want to just sit quietly in your seat for a couple minutes. Well, because now Questlove's got to, he's trying to accept his award. You know, that happened. And then when Will Smith won, I noticed that in the audience, not from everyone, but from some people, he got a standing ovation. I read that during the commercial break, Nicole Kidman and Keith Urban went over and hugged him and comforted him, and that he was comforted by Denzel Washington. This is the commercial break, I believe, in between when it happened and before he accepted his award. But so, you know, this is all, and I get that a lot of these people were in what I've read from a lot of people, and because there have been a lot of, you know, boots on the ground, you know, people reporting back from what it was really like in the room. I do understand that many of them were very stunned for the rest of the broadcast over the whole situation. And people do strange things when they're,
you know,
stunned,
Hollywood to me,
it feels disheartening that everyone sat and witnessed this happen. And then there was sort of this congratulatory, I mean, I know that there are a lot of people who are jumping in to defend Will Smith, and they have various reasons for doing that they've been upfront about, you know, whether they say, hey, you know, he was sticking up for his wife and he should be applauded for that, or she's got a serious medical condition and it's not funny and it's very hurtful. I mean, I still fall into the camp, and I know a lot of people do, that, well, violence is never okay. And we don't ever, we teach
you could stick up to your wife. You could stick up for your wife. And after, which was what's supposed to be done, is you see Chris Rock after the thing and you say, I don't appreciate that, and I think you should apologize to my wife.
Well, or quite frankly, Will Smith could have walked up onto the stage, taken the mic from him, and done that.
No, that's narcissism again. You are not your event. That is not responsible. You, that is not the way an adult acts. You are, if somebody insults you, fine. You don't make a scene and put the spotlight on you. You wait until the commercial break, or you wait until you see Chris Rock, and you say, and you could sit there and be very pissed off. You can certainly show that you're not happy. But it's not your place to get up on stage and make some big, kind of act here, whether it's grabbing a mic or doing anything. That's not your place. Whether you were insulted or not, that is not the way you act, unless allowed to do whatever you know. What you're basically saying is then we all can act impetuously. We all can just act on our emotions. There's no sense of order or decorum or anything. If we're mad, we can do whatever we want. That's not the way we live in a civilized society.
And I agree with you. And I've got two kids.
Right.
I tell them regularly, we do not ever put our hands on another person.
Exactly.
We do not do that. It doesn't matter. But this, but that. No, it doesn't matter what happened before. We don't ever do that. But I also think in the analysis of this, some things that are coming out suggest that maybe Will Smith was just so triggered. Like, the Today Show this morning played a clip of Hoda Kotb's interview of him when he, I guess it was like he released his memoir. And I don't know when that was, sometime in recent years. This clip package that they played, he talked about how his,
I understand. Yes, his father.
Domestic violence in his home, and he feels as an adult, he looks back and feels like a coward because he feels like he didn't step in to defend his mother, and so, you know, part of that you have to think like,
okay,
there's a difference between being insulted and being triggered, and I'm not defending what he did. I'm just saying that it seems like this.
Well, everybody is triggered by something, so then we can't live in a society because I don't know what your triggers are.
Well, right.
So I can't say or do anything for the fear then of being hit by anyone at any time if I go to a grocery store or anything else, because this trigger stuff is another thing that, okay, I can't the society cannot change to make your life acceptable. We live in a community where you have to live together, and there's sometimes when you have to make concessions for the larger group, and to make this guy now seem like a victim, which it sounds like is happening here, is ridiculous. He's not the victim.
Well, yeah, and I have been kind of surprised that there has been such a sympathetic reaction over the course of the last couple of days, because it, again, at the end of the day, if you go back to it doesn't matter, we do not ever put our hands on anyone, you know, then that is it. I mean, there's no exceptions to that. And that's
no, we can't, this had better, we had better, once again, we're not going to, but we better learn a lesson, because if we are allowing now any kind of behavior, and this is my point, accountability, consequences, we are removing consequences and accountability from horrible behavior, and our society and our culture is suffering from it, and we are accepting it, and all these are little chips away. We're chipping away at things. I don't, you know, you can't, if a joke now, so in other words, we can't, so no one is off, so now I have to know everybody walking down the street what may trigger them. If I close a door, when I'm getting out of my car, or if I don't stop long enough at a stoplight and somebody's parents got hit because a car went through a stoplight and now they're triggered. I mean, how do we go on in society if we have to be concerned about every 8 billion people's triggers? How do you perform as a society?
Well, I think that's why people who are defending Chris Rock are sort of saying, like, we don't even know that he knew that there was a medical condition, and, you know, I mean,
I'm just seeing a lot of bad behavior not being curtailed. And as long as one person gets away with it again, like you just said, then the next person gets away with it too. And now I'm reading stuff. Oh, well, you know, I mean, he's not the first person to have done this. you know, this other person did this, and this other person, they talk about taking away his Oscar. Well, they haven't taken Roman Polanski's Oscar away, and they haven't taken Mel Gibson's Oscar away. So why should they take Will Smith's? Well, wait a minute.
Well, why? No, here's the reason why. Because what he did happened during their broadcast at a show that they invited these people to come to. They invited them to come present. They invited Chris Rock there to be a presenter. So it is a little bit, it's not like, you know, you could potentially, depending on who you work for, okay, you maybe could get fired from your job for having criminal charges pressed against you or anything that might violate a code of conduct, say, at your office. It could happen. But if you assaulted someone at your office, you'd be fired on the spot.
Right. But my point is that people are bringing up other things to say, well, wait a minute. If you don't take this person's Oscar away, and here's my view once again is.
But my thing is, though, with those other guys.
I get it.
While their infractions are, you know, also unthinkable and terrible, the Oscars has more at stake here. Like the Academy has more at stake here because this was on their turf at their, event. And so it is different from Roman Polanski.
I understand, but the apologists out there for Will Smith and those who want to make him a victim and those who want to mitigate and to lessen what he did and make excuses for it are looking at other, and especially sadly, this can't be overlooked. Now there is a racial aspect to this because my point is, if you want to give Will Smith a pass, it's easy to play the race card. So people are saying, well, wait a minute, Roman Polanski, white, kept his award. They're not looking at the nuances that you are. You're looking at it from a very logical, nuanced way, which is the right way to do it. But they're looking at this and throwing this other stuff now out into the conversation. Well, Mel Gibson is a racist. Roman Polanski is allegedly a rapist. This guy's allegedly a racist. So why does Will Smith get off because he did this? And my point is, whether it happened at the event or not, shouldn't we? If you're really, that's why Hollywood doesn't know what to do here, because they are so ultra liberal and they're worried about every word and every designation you say. And then when something goes against that, then they try to make excuses for it. You know what? You're right. Roman Polanski should have lost his. I'll take it the other way. You're right. Roman Polanski should have gotten his Oscar taken away. Mel Gibson should get his Oscar taken away. So how many times do you want real justice? Do you want real or do you want to say, well, they got away with it, so why can't I? That's not the way you get better. You learn from your mistakes. So you know what? We're wrong for not taking Roman Polanski's things away. But now, from now on, we're drawing a line in the sand. You can't do it. You can't act crazy, whether it's you're going to be up for losing it. Once again, consequences. As I said before, the ultimate consequence would have been on in front of billions of people, millions of people. Will Smith wins, and look it, he was not allowed to accept his award. Biggest night, but Hollywood did not want to deprive him of his big moment.
Right.
And that is not the way you work. So I mean, that's why I said, I think the Oscars are getting irrelevant because there's double standards. There is a bending of the rules for those who we like. If he isn't canceled, then why are half the other? Then why is Kevin Spacey canceled? Why can't Kevin Spacey, who's got two Academy Awards, can't get a job?
Right.
I mean, this is my point. We make concessions now for those we like. And we cancel those. Why is Al Franken not a senator today? Ridiculous.
Well, that's political. And
so but my point is, he was canceled. He did something, and oh my God, this is abhorrent. And he's canceled. There's no due process. There's no nothing. He's gone. Kevin Spacey. Oh, this is terrible. Gone. Can't get a job. Will Smith. Oh well. He was triggered.
That's just something that I
I understand. You know, no, I mean, but you're right. You're right for pointing out. That's the PR machine that's out there now. There's a group out there that is going to try to mitigate this and try to make this sound like he's got a reason, like he's the victim. He's a societal victim. And yes, it was wrong, but we can't keep going with these buts and these commas. Because you are allowing bad behavior to be not only not punished, but you're actually encouraging it again. Someone's going to do something worse. Thank God he didn't have a gun. What if he had a knife? But my point is, do you think Will Smith was checked? When he walked into that event?
I don't think Will Smith was ever going to walk into the Oscars with a weapon.
I wouldn't think anyone's going to walk into an airport with a weapon anymore. And how many times do you see people go, there was some guy had a gun in his bag? Would you think that's normal? Would you think in today's world that someone would go to an airport with a gun in their bag? But they find him.
Well, they do, but that's, I think part of the reason why the security was so lax on this is because in that section of the theater that they're in, that is like the elite of the elite.
And that was another problem. What was all, that show was such a train wreck again. Horribly, horribly produced. Horribly, the in memoriam was a disgrace.
Oh my God. You know what, Jim? I could not believe Spirit in the Sky. Talk about poor taste. I mean, what?
Well, not only the song was in poor taste.
Oh, no, the song was just...
But my point is, this is what's problem with the Oscars and with all these award shows. From a director's standpoint, the original idea for the in memoriam thing was a great idea. And if you remember 10 years ago or 15 years ago, and it really became kind of a staple now of all these award shows, it was a very simple, solemn 5 minutes of no theatrics, no production. It was simply a screen with some light music in the background, with no one on stage, and the flashing of pictures for people to appreciate and remember the people who passed away. Great idea, perfect execution in its original form. But what has happened over the last 5 or 10 years? When in the hands of the producers of these shows, because if you're a director or producer, it's no fun to just aim a camera at a screen for 5 minutes and just have the pictures there. That's boring. You need something to make it exciting. So you need to suddenly there were singers. Just a solitary singer would come on and sing some heartwarming song in the background. And it wasn't even a person of note. There was just somebody, singing a song off to the side. Then a couple years later, now it's Beyonce. And so then what happens? Suddenly the camera now has to choose between who do they show? Beyonce singing? Or the point of this segment to show the pictures of the people who have passed away and pay them tribute?
Yes, but the Oscars have always, they've been missing the point for years. They don't even like to let the winners talk. They cut them off constantly. And the whole point of being there is awarding these people
for
their work.
Could you see any of the names? Could you? Because they had to have this giant choir up there.
No, see, that's the thing. The choir, okay, beautiful voices. They kind of started out in the right,
inappropriate.
Because they started out with What You Need, which is like, I don't know, it was like a Sarah McLachlan song, I think, which is exactly what you need for the in memoriam. But then when it turned to Spirit in the Sky, it was like, I didn't know what.
There should be no competition for attention. There should be no choirs. They shouldn't be singing any Sarah McLachlan songs. This is 5 minutes to to appreciate these people. There should be the way it was initially done, as I said before, with just music off stage, no high profile people, no gospel choirs, no bands, no nothing. Aim your camera, show the pictures, play some music in the background that we don't see anybody. I don't have Beyonce. I don't have nothing. And let me and have the close up on those pictures of those people. You when you bring anyone up and you have a choir or a singer, now the camera is diverted from the screen, either in a long shot where you can't even see the person, or a close up where somebody you just barely see them in the their face and their years of life and death in the background, because now I have to get my close up on Beyonce or whoever I've chosen. That's not what this is about. Once again, look at me, narcissism. Get out of the way. I know it's boring. That's what it's supposed to be. You're supposed to be a camera, a single camera staring at a screen for 5 minutes. Deal with it. That's the point of that segment. Not, well, how do we liven this up? It's not supposed to be livened up.
No, I agree. They never get the in memoriam. You know, right. They always screw it up.
How sad. How sad was Liza Minnelli?
Oh God. Okay, wait. No, before we move on to Liza Minnelli, I do have to point out that, and maybe I just missed this because there was so much going on the stage. You know, usually the way that they get criticized about the in memoriam is who they left out. And I do get their point. Like, there's always going to be some people left out and they have this online thing, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But correct me if I'm wrong. I believe they left out Bob Saget, which that would be, that's a big one to leave out. And did they leave out Ed Asner?
Oh, they may have.
Didn't he pass away this year?
Oh, definitely. And he was in Up. You can't say, well, he was just a TV guy. I don't know. That's a good point.
But again, maybe they showed him and I missed
Well, because my point is that,
I don't know.
Well, that's the fact. The fact is you don't know because the camera is not centered on the people who should be respected and honored. It's on this ridiculous sideshow you've got going. There's a perfect example of this. This is not just now. This is always, to your point. And it's not even just the Oscars. Let me just give a quick sidebar story on this. So every year here in Chicago, you probably, because you don't live in Chicago anymore, but they keep rerunning this special about Bozo Circus, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's so popular here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. In the 80s, they brought together all the clowns from Bozo Circus. They had this big event. It was one of their anniversaries. They had this big event at Medina Temple downtown, and they televised it, right? And they had the original Bozo, Bob Bell, and they had Cookie and Wizzo and Sandy and Mr. Ned, Ringmaster Ned, everybody, right? And this is the first time some of these people have seen these people in 10 years. And they, because they retired and they were gone, you haven't seen them dressed up. And here they are. This is like a total kind of just heartwarming, warm fuzzy, oh my God, it brings me back to my childhood moment. You can't ask for anything more. They put each of them in a spotlight. It was, you know, for someone like me or anybody else who grew up in Chicago who watched this show when you were a little kid, it was, you know, you had to cry, right?
Yeah.
You know what they did? In the midst of this, they did this very emotional, dramatic thing where they as this song about Be a Clown came on, right? They were singing Be a Clown. And as they sang this song, they hit a spotlight, and each of these people, Mr. Ned, Cookie, Sandy, Oliver, the spotlight hit them. It was beautiful. It was, they're all in darkness, and then the spotlight hit them, you know, Be a Clown. It was great. And then you know what they did? Instead of just letting people absorb that and see that and just let them revel in it, all of a sudden the song kicks up in its tempo, the lights go up, and this is the most surreal thing I've ever seen. A bunch of cheerleaders come out with pom-poms and go in front of all the clowns. And they just start doing their routines in front of all the clowns. And it's like, what the hell is going on here? Right. And this is my point. If you're a producer of this show, instead of thinking, what am I, I'm creating a moment here. I'm thinking of, well, this is boring. We need some action. No, you don't need any action. You know, well, and that's what, and that, and like, so, and the Oscar, and instead of all these professional people, there are all these directors, and I'm like, how could no one get that? And now the other side of the thing, like I said, Liza, that was an embarrassment. That was embarrassing. You, okay. I understand you want to celebrate Cabaret. You yes. want to celebrate a legend, but you know what? There's a point where that, I don't, that was not celebrating it. That was sadly either exploiting her or yeah. now you said poor Liza. You should not come away with that saying poor Liza.
You know, I did think she seemed very unprepared.
Oh, she was out of it. She's clearly not well. She may have Parkinson's. Well, she didn't even know after she got there and then she did the announcement. 2 minutes later, I don't think she realized she even said hello because she said, oh my gosh, I'm happy to be here. She was doing her thing again.
You know what though? I think like you could kind of see the cards in her hand close enough that, and she was kind of shuffling them. And I think what happened was, I think she got her cards mixed up. And so then she was nervous because she knew she wasn't going to know what to say. And then it seemed like she was kind of trying to ad lib a little bit there.
She kept going, she just kept yelling.
No, she was, but when she was kind of, I sort of reckon that like she was, and you know, Lady Gaga, I mean, and this is the other thing too. This is what you want to see from people at an award show like this. Like, you know, it was in such stark contrast to what happened with Will Smith and Chris Rock. You have Lady Gaga, who clearly was prepared to you know, walk Liza through this, get her through it with the least amount of incident, right?
Well, she has experience because she deals with Tony Bennett too.
Well, Tony Bennett,
she's become Hollywood's caretaker now.
Well, also, though, I do believe that Lady Gaga is.
Oh, she's
she's a class act.
Oh, definitely.
I believe she's a super compassionate person. I think she has a ton of respect for her fellow.
No, the producers artists. Should not have brought her out. That's my you have to assess the situation and say this woman's not well.
But you can kind of tell by the way that Lady Gaga seemed super prepared to like, you know, to like save this
moment. You can't.
I think it was probably clear before they even got on stage that Liza.
I'll tell you exactly what happened. Once again, they wanted drama. They wanted a moment. And so they knew, to your point, exactly, they knew that Liza was not well, that Liza was not going to be able to pull this off, but they overlooked it, and I'm sure Lady Gaga, to your point, everything you say about her is correct, I'm sure she said, you know what, I'll get her through this.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But I do think
But someone has to say, no, you can't do that. You know why I respect Tony Bennett's family? Because Tony Bennett has Alzheimer's. We know that. He's had it for a while. They did this final concert. I don't know if you saw it. It was on CBS over the holidays. It was fantastic. With Lady Gaga, because they made an album mm-hmm. together.
Yeah.
He came out and performed at Radio City Music Hall. They didn't know how he was going to do. They really, it was, and this is my point. He nailed it. It was like unbelievable. But after that show, they said, he's done. We got lucky.
Mm-hmm.
It's done. He's going out on a note where now when I think of Tony Bennett, I think of an amazing performance.
Yeah.
And now he's off the stage. He's gone. He cannot duplicate that. You got lucky. It was an amazing moment. Cherish it. Savor it. Remember it. Liza now, my memory of Liza is a confused, sick, unwell person who sadly then when you see her there in a wheelchair, befuddled, now I also now have to think of the sadness of her mother. And oh my God, now she's become Judy Garland. And my gosh, so that's all you, so her handlers did her a disservice?
Yeah.
For allowing this to go on? Oh, let's give her one moment? No, you can't do it. You know what, and while hers was so obvious, I also had to, you know, because I watched it all, you know, on DVR, I had to fast forward after the first couple of seconds through Anthony Hopkins. Clearly, he's losing it.
What was going on?
He's clearly lost it. I mean, the guy, ironically, just won an Academy Award, last year, for playing a man with Alzheimer's. I don't know what happened, but clearly he's having issues.
I did also wonder, though, again, I think a lot of people were still pretty stunned at that point, and he seemed to be wanting to, like, okay, like.
But he kept saying, I'm so happy to be, he kept repeating again. I know, when you hear the repeating,
I don't know if he was trying to collect his thoughts, because he did seem to allude to the Will Smith thing for a moment, but
right.
then maybe.
No, Diddy
was the one, he came out, he said exactly the right thing to change the mood in the room and to try to move this thing on. And that was said. But I think when Anthony Hopkins came out, it almost seemed like he felt he needed to say something about it. And then he sort of didn't know what to say.
Well, I don't think he was. I, once again, I appreciate your optimism. But from somebody who actually lived with someone who has Alzheimer's, I can tell you that he has issues. The repeating of it. You could see the confusion. He was grasping for something to say, and he kept coming back to what he kept saying before.
Right.
He's got issues. And once again, I understand, okay, he won the Academy Award last year, so that's the tradition. But there
but
has
also,
to.
Also, if you recall, last year he wasn't there in person to accept it. He did a video thing.
Right. But my point is, the tradition is the winner of the year before comes to give the award out the next year. Now, the other side of the coin is, too. What?
Yep.
What?
Well, I was going to say that'll be interesting to see what they do next year about Will Smith.
I didn't even think of that.
Okay.
But and then the other side, don't forget, there's also controversy last year with Anthony Hopkins winning, because the odds on favorite was what's his name from Black Panther? I can't remember his name now.
What was, oh, yeah.
You know, who passed away.
He passed away. Chadwick Boseman. Yeah.
So he was supposed to win. Anthony Hopkins, for 3 days afterwards, had to apologize.
Oh, I know. But that's the, it's so hard because nobody really, you don't really know who's going to win.
I understand that. But my point is, he was in a controversy that once again dealt with race. And now here was this other thing with race involved, with Will Smith hitting Chris Rock. I'm sure that was hovering in the room with him. He's lost something, and the people around these people they can't keep trotting these people out. A few years ago, everybody talks about Betty White. She became the poster child. A few years ago, Betty White was at something, and she, she's so sharp. No, she wasn't. Betty White came out, and I think it was at the Screen Actors Guild a couple of years ago, and it was embarrassing. The woman's 98 years old. I'm not faulting her, but we can't keep trotting these people out just because they're still breathing, because they're not in good shape, and it's embarrassing, and you are doing more disservice to their memory, more disservice to their legend by bringing them out in public when they can no longer handle this.
I know, but I think you're right. But it is their handlers.
Oh, definitely.
And their family members that need to be
But they had to have seen this at rehearsal.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, it was very clear that.
And you have to say, okay, and I know that I know Lady Gaga probably.
Just the fact, so Liza Minnelli had, so everybody there reads off a teleprompter, right? Unless you're opening an envelope, you're reading off a teleprompter. Now, Liza, they had given her cue cards in her hand, not cue cards, but you know what I mean? Index cards.
Right.
So she had her remarks written on those cards. Now, they probably did realize, like, ooh, this is going to be kind of touch and go. But maybe if you give the producers the benefit of the doubt, maybe they thought, like, Liza Minnelli's been in show business since she was a kid.
Doesn't
so
matter.
Maybe they're thinking, put the cards in her hands. She's going to be able to just read off the cards. All she's got to do is read her part.
Okay.
But like I said, you can see the cards where she's gotten them all shuffled around. You can see she had one card flipped upside down so you could read it from the audience. You know,
if you're a parent, you know your child's name. How come you don't know it when you have Alzheimer's? Whether you were in show business for 80 years or not, the woman is sick.
But I don't think the producers of the show.
She doesn't have the capability. They don't have the capability. She doesn't have the capability of doing this. Clearly, she's at a point where, and if you know Liza Minnelli, you know Liza Minnelli is never, she's always off. She's always, she never sticks to any script anywhere.
Right. Yeah.
So what are you expecting now? Suddenly she's going to? No, she's spontaneous. That's part of her talent.
No, I know. Now, the other thing that Will Smith robbed me of, we'll say, or maybe the world, probably the world, robbed the world. Because, you know, there's always sort of usually there's like a whole thing about all the stuff that happened, right? And there was a lot, but nobody really talked about any of it because of that.
Right.
But what was the deal with the, when they went to accept the award for Drive My Car? What was the deal with the lady standing on stage taking notes?
I don't know what that was.
What was that?
I don't know.
In a normal year, that would have been one of the number one questions.
Right.
You know, like they always do like Oscar questions,
right.
Answers,
yeah, right.
All these mysterious happenings. That would have been like at the top of the list.
Yeah. No,
what?
That was.
That lady got up with, I guess that was the producer of the film, right? Either the producer or the director, because they were winning best. What were they winning?
The best foreign film, right?
Yeah, best foreign feature. Yeah. Not foreign feature. That's not what it is. International.
Well, whatever
feature.
They call it now. It's the same thing. Yeah.
But she came up there with him with a little notepad.
I know.
And a pen. Yeah. And then I didn't know if like maybe she had remarks written on that, but no, she was actually writing things down.
Yeah. Well, maybe she was journaling. I don't.
And this is a mystery that I feel.
Well, see, here's the thing.
Solved
this,
now.
Well, this is
nobody's going to remember.
But
that.
And to your point from earlier, you know, this is the thing. Okay, if the Oscars now and always have been. As I said last week, you know, this was one of the biggest. It used to be, you know, Super Bowl numbers, people, you know, billions of people. It was the biggest event held annually in the world, right? On television. I mean, it dominated everything. Now it's just an out, but, you know, to your point, like, well, you know, this thing may have helped, you know, get interest in it. Okay. So is the Oscars then a freak show? Or is it an award show? If we're now looking for, I mean, the Grammys, for instance, the Grammys aren't even an award show anymore. You don't even know they're angry when they have to give an award out.
Well, because they want it because it's all about the performance.
Right. So, right. But my point is the Grammys, and this is what happened: the Grammy Awards. And you might be a little too young to understand. The Grammy Awards were always on television, got the worst ratings ever. Because the Grammys were kind of viewed as the Academy Awards of music. So there was a show called the American Music Awards, which was produced by Dick Clark, who is Mr. Mainstream. And so these were all very popular. You know, they were all based on you know, the public's voting. Mm-hmm. So the American Music Awards used to always get huge ratings because they were celebrating the stuff that the people liked. They got the big stars there, and it was just this show. The Grammys, on the other hand, were voted on by industry insiders. So necessarily, the most popular stuff didn't win because they were looking at the quality of it. So the show was much more low-keyed. They didn't, you know, the winners were sometimes people that no one even heard the record. Who's that?
Yeah.
So there was a point about 10 years ago or so, or 15 years ago, where CBS said, look, you either are going to get some ratings or we're not putting you on anymore. So now that the at the Grammys, the awards actually get in the way. If you watch the show, it's almost like a hindrance. Like, oh, well, you know what? Don't worry about it. We're going to give this award away. But then we're going to have, you know, Dua Lipa, you know, Oompa Loompa is going to come back on. And don't worry. So stay tuned.
Oompa,
you know,
Loompa.
Oompa Loompa's
well,
going to come on.
You know, I'm surprised you haven't warmed up to her now that she has.
Oh, I know.
Duetted with
number
Elton.
One. Yeah, I mean, gave Elton his number one, his first number one song in the UK in 30 years.
I mean, clearly you're never going to warm up to Dua Lipa.
No, I do. No, I do. No, but it was funny. But I did used to call her Oompa Loompa when she first started.
I still do.
And
you
still do.
Did.
Oh, believe me. At his concert, ironically, at his concerts now, he sings that song.
Well, yeah, of course he does.
Yeah.
It's a huge hit.
I know, but my point is he sings it to, you know, the irony is he does this 2.5-hour show. It's all about him playing the piano and his band and everything else. And then he does this song, and it's played to a pre-recorded track.
Well, yeah.
He's not playing the piano. He's just sitting there singing to it. There's a video of her singing her parts. It's against everything that the rest of the show, you know, represents, and it gets a huge ovation because everybody in the place knows that song.
Well, of course, yeah.
Yeah, and it's ironic because for people like me, I'm like, okay, it's fine, you know, but I haven't listened to it.
It's really a mashup of two of his previous hits.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's there's actually a few of in there, a few more than that in there, but yeah, he didn't re-record those vocals. Those are his original vocals from Sacrifice.
Oh, are they really?
Oh yeah, it's a total mashup. This Panau group is an Australian kind of electronic band, and he did this about 10 years ago with them. He just said, hey, here's my catalog. Here's my masters. Go in and just do whatever you want with it. So they did an album about 10 years ago, which was also number one in England, where they just took all different parts of, you know, songs, completely different, you know, different melodies, different, you know, with different lyrics from different songs from 10 years before. And they just all mashed them up, and it was you know, I wasn't crazy about it, but I don't like that kind of music. But they tried to do it again. Apparently, this was the best of the lot. Of the second chance, so they just said, okay, we'll just do this one song. But yeah, he didn't re-record that. She did. But those are his vocals from Sacrifice from 1989.
Wow.
Yeah. There's nothing new there. He didn't know. They just delivered it to him. They just sent him an email and said, here's what I did.
So, like, it wasn't like he and Dua Lipa actually collaborated.
No, they had the song done, and then someone said, hey, you know, wouldn't it be good if she did this? And he called her up and said, hey, what do you want to do? She said, yeah, I'll do it.
Well, of course she's got,
No, there was no collaboration there. No, this was done in a studio. The guy took the Elton's lyrics. He took, he created a beat to it. He took some other background vocals. There's toward the end, you can hear this, like, you know, sure. That's a song from 1976 of his. And there's some other little melodies and instruments from that song. So he just mashed it together. The guy that really winds up being the beneficiary of that is Elton's lyricist, Bernie Taupin. He didn't have anything to do, and he's getting a paycheck because he wrote those lyrics.
Well, yeah.
No, my point is he wasn't even involved. There wasn't even like, here, go do this. And, you know, I'm sure one day they woke up and said, oh, by the way, you know, they just created this mash. Oh, whatever. You know, no one will hear it. And now he's getting checks.
Right.
You know, so he really was like, whoa, whatever. I guess I'll take another number one song again, too. But
yeah,
but my point is that whole kind of thing. Just is a whole different world, and the Grammys now are about the, like you just said, they're about the performances. Who's going to be at the Grammys, and who wore what at the Grammys? Here's another question: what was Song of the Year last year for at the Grammys? This year, they haven't had the Grammys yet. In fact, they delayed them. They're going to be in a couple of weeks, aren't they?
I haven't watched the Grammys in years.
Well, because I can't. I feel as if I'm like my mom and dad watching rock and roll now. When I watch the Grammys, I have no idea who any of these people are, you know. So, that isn't even out of my radar screen anymore. But they made a concerted effort, and that's why I still like to watch the Screen Actors Guild, because at least that focuses on the acting.
Yeah.
Now,
but you know what though? I think with the Oscars, the problem is perpetuating the problem, which is. They're grasping at straws because they know that people are losing interest. They know that people don't like the show anymore. They know the ratings are down. So they're constantly grasping at straws, trying to do different things and try different things. And like the one word that keeps popping up over the last couple of days, I've noticed like consistently, no matter what whether you're watching the Today Show or you're reading CNN or the New Yorker, chaos. Is the one word that keeps coming back. And so the Oscars have now reached a point of just chaos, I guess.
Well, as I said, it's a freak show. That's my point. I think that there will always be an Oscars, but I really believe that, ironically, last week on this podcast, I asked if they were still relevant. And a week later, I didn't expect to have an answer so quick. But in my view, the Oscars at this point are irrelevant to me. Nobody is seeing these movies because, sadly, Hollywood has sold out. They're not making the kind of movies that they did, as your point, as you said at the top of this. Are we making great movies anymore? Now, if you remember when we've talked about this, and I've been giving you my, over the years, I've given you my problems with the Oscars. And one thing that I have said, which I was heartened to see until I saw the execution. If you remember a few podcasts over the years, I've said to you, the Oscars are about celebrating film. So what they should have is more features, or instead of all these dance segments, all this other BS, celebrate movies, show movies from the past, show clips to get people involved to say, wow, I never saw that movie, I never heard of that movie, but maybe I want to see it, so we can appreciate what was made in the past, because right now what we're seeing is disposable movies. But like you said, whether it's James Bond or The Godfather, these are films that are going to last for another 500 years. So when I hear they're going to do a tribute to The Godfather for its 50th anniversary, I go, wow, okay, someone was listening. This is exactly what I was saying. Mm-hmm. You know, bring back a film that's worthy, that everybody should know about or at least heard about, and maybe they'll be intrigued to see it, and celebrate that. And they showed a nice montage of the films. Great. And then, once again, they drop the ball. They bring out Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, and Francis Ford Coppola. Why were Al Pacino and Robert De Niro there?
I know, they didn't say a word.
They didn't say a word.
They said, Viva Ukraine, but they I found that bizarre, too. I'm like, what is the point of bringing these guys out if they're not going to get to say anything?
Just stood there. So that was ridiculous. Then Francis Ford Coppola comes out and really says nothing. He mentioned two people, Robert Evans and I can't remember.
Mario
Puzo, who wrote it, right? But he didn't offer any insight. He just said their names. He said Robert Evans, and he didn't say why Robert Evans. He didn't say who Robert Evans was. Once again, there's a billion people watching. Everybody isn't in that room with you. You're not playing to the audience in the room. You're playing to the audience around the world. You can't just say Robert Evans, because 99% of the people do not know who Robert Evans was or is.
Right.
Now, everybody in that room might, and I'm still telling you, anybody, 35 years old or younger doesn't even know who he is. So explain why you are thanking Robert Evans. Explain why you are thanking Mario. Don't just say Mario Puzo. If I don't know The Godfather, then I certainly don't know who Mario Puzo is. Give me some insight. Once again, the idea was well crafted, but they didn't execute it. You know, you have to tell, you know, well, he says, well, you tell Francis Ford Coppola, could you give us, they had their remarks. We know they have rehearsal. Somebody is supposed to say, you know, can you at least expound on this? And if he doesn't want to, then you know what? Then have somebody there before you introduce Mario Puzo. Have a critic there that explains why this movie is important and why it is good. And here we have, and if he just wants to come out and make this ridiculous speech that was 2 minutes long, had no information, and you had two screwballs standing next to him just waving, what the hell was that?
Well, it's weird too, because that was not just done in isolation, the Godfather thing. There were several of those throughout the broadcast, right? They did the Pulp Fiction one, White Men Can't Jump.
Yeah.
Obviously, Cabaret was mentioned that it was the anniversary, but clearly that wasn't going to be like a bit, you know, because that would not have worked. But like, when you think about it, the White Men Can't Jump presentation and the Pulp Fiction, those were, you know, scripted out and all of, well, in both cases, it was three of them. They all participated in the banter and said something about the film, you know. And so it was really strange. It was almost as if maybe Francis Ford Coppola just said, I'm just going to say what I'm going to say. Like, don't give me any.
Well, I tell you, scripted. Here's what I think.
You know, I don't know why else. Why would that be so?
Well, because I'll tell you why. Because Robert De Niro is a horrible public speaker. If he doesn't have a script, this guy can't put two words together.
Yes, but they could provide him with a script. They clearly scripted the remarks.
I know, but I don't mean cue cards. He can't read when he reads off of cue cards. He's terrible. He's awful. And Al Pacino is the same way. I've seen him. With Al Pacino, he's another guy that will go off on a tangent. So there's two guys who obviously, you know, they're that dynamic of they're amazing actors and yet they're horrible public speakers. And once they're not acting, they are reclusive and they're introverts. So
I get that and I respect that.
Yeah, but my point is,
but it did seem very strange to trot them out and then have them not even say.
Well, my point is, my point is that whatever the intended purpose was of that segment, it was a complete failure because if I do not know anything about The Godfather, and the whole idea is to once again celebrate and pay tribute to this. And if the idea was to actually create some interest, either as a longtime fan to me to say, wow, that was great, or B, more importantly, to a younger generation who anything that happened 5 years ago they think is ancient history, so they don't know anything. If you want to reach that group and actually maybe intrigue them to say, you know, and interest them and engage them and say, maybe you want to watch this Godfather thing. I know it's an old movie. It's 50 years old. And hey, you know, if I was 15 and you showed me, a Charlie Chaplin movie when I was 14, I wouldn't want to see it either because it happened when I was 50 years ago. I don't know what that means. But if you want to do that today, because of the access, we have access to these movies. You can do this. You can watch Godfather anytime you want. But I didn't learn anything new about that. It didn't do anything to capture my imagination to say, wow. Whereas if I understand, if you want to have Francis Ford Coppola do that, but you know what? If you see in rehearsal what this is going to be, then you pivot and you say, you know what? If that's all you want to do, Francis, fine. You're Francis Ford Coppola. You can say whatever you want, or you could say three lines, or you can talk for 20 minutes. But if that's what you're going to do, then I'm going to have some... before you come out, I'm going to have a critic or somebody. I'm going to have Ben Mankiewicz come out, and I'm going to have him give a history of The Godfather and give me a 3-minute or 4-minute little overview as to why this movie is so important, why it's still considered great, and why everybody should see it. And here are the people that were in, and then boom. That's how you do that. Now,
Diddy did kind of like an intro. Wasn't that why he was out there?
I know, but Diddy is Diddy.
I mean, he kind of talked about his own connection.
Yeah, I understand that. Right, which is fine. But, you know, Diddy is not the guy that I want to be. I'm not going to take, movie advice from.
He's very into film. He is.
I know, okay. Boy, you can't. I can't wait till about 4 more years because then you're going to come over to my side and say, you know what? I remember I was listening to that podcast like 4 years ago, and boy, was I naive, Jim. I guess I just needed to. I guess I needed to be seasoned a little. You're still holding on.
It's because I get, you know why? Because I get distracted by pretty things. So I see all the glitz and the glam, the beautiful dresses.
Oh my God! Can I say? One word, but I mean two words. What was the key message of the red carpet and all the women at that event?
The key message? I don't know, but is this going to be about Tracee Ellis Ross?
No, it's going to be about one word. Breasts. I never saw more breasts, but Amy Schumer was showing cleavage. Okay,
well, she's like Hollywood. They
I understand that, but I mean, did you see Venus Williams or was it Venus or I think it was Venus Williams. Did you see her dress?
Yeah, I saw all the dresses.
Okay,
this is not new.
I mean, I don't know. They must have got a ruler out.
Well, no, I thought Tracee Ellis Ross was the one who was in most danger of a wardrobe malfunction, should we say. I was very worried for her when she was presenting. But somehow they pulled it off. I don't know. There must have been some mysterious industrial...
There had to have been gorilla tape or double-sided. Yeah, because
that was looking... I was worried for her that there was going to be a malfunction. But no, I mean, you know, I get these... I don't know. Like when Zoe Kravitz came out on stage, it literally took my breath away. I forgot about the Will Smith thing all of a sudden because she looked so amazing. Like, so I get distracted by these things.
Okay, well,
like watching them. I didn't watch the red carpet though.
You didn't?
Well, I couldn't because I wasn't home. I wasn't home, and then I.
In another time, there would have been no. I wasn't home. You would have made sure you were home. No. So this, as I said, it's going to take you a while to come to the dark side with me, and I await you. My hand is outstretched.
Well, when that happens,
I am Darth Vader. I am waiting. Emily, come. I am your father.
I think maybe when that day comes, what I'll do is I'll only watch the red carpet and then I won't even bother with it. But at the moment, you're still watching the broadcast. But
I'll tell you, like I said, I didn't have a choice but I did have a choice because I decided to go to a concert that I didn't have to go to. And not watch the Academy Awards. I don't think 20 years ago I would have done that. I would have said, oh my God, I can't do that. The Oscars are on. So I was willing to you know, DVR it and watch it the next day and whatever. And so that to me, as I said before, from somebody who used to be so psyched by this.
Oh, I remember. I remember. You used to give me a copy of your envelope.
Right, exactly. I mean, I'm not BSing here. So for me to say, you know what? I could watch it tomorrow.
Yeah.
That's a huge leap. And then to hear what happened at this, that completely obliterated, once again, when we get back to the main topic again, this was about movies. This is not about Will Smith having to either prove to his wife that he loves her or that he's her protector or all this other psychological baggage that he's carrying or some macho thing that he's got to prove because he's always viewed as kind of like this, you know, happy-go-lucky guy. He, you know, of all the rappers, he's the one who never swore, you know, so he's got this image within the rap world that he's a lightweight, you know,
a very wholesome image.
Well, that's my point, but the rappers don't have a wholesome image. Tupac Shakur got killed. So my point is that he's in the rap world, but he's also looked as a lightweight because he was just Mr. Wholesome and, you know, the Fresh Prince. He wasn't, you know, effing the cops.
Well, no.
So now he's got street cred. Now he's not the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. He's the Piss Prince of Bel-Air. So he's got some street cred now, at least in his mind he does. So my point is there's a lot of issues floating around Will Smith that clearly need to be resolved. But my point is the night was supposed to me, the most telling point, as I said earlier, the most telling point was I spoke about this show with my wife for a half hour and we never discussed one winner.
Yeah.
That to me, when I hung up the phone, I said, oh my God. I forgot to ask her what was best picture or who was best actor. You know, I think, no, she told me that because she said, you know, when he won the award later. So I knew he won. But that was the only, you know, so this is the night where it's supposed to be about Hollywood, about its history, about its present day, and about its future. The future stars, the future directors who are going to move forward. This had none of that. Every winner, if you notice, checked a box. Every winner checked a box. They can't complain that women don't win Best Director awards. Jane Campion won that. They can't complain that people of color didn't win because we have Will Smith. Wow, the woman from West Side Story, she checked 7 boxes. She's a lesbian. She's a Hispanic. Check the box there. I didn't see one of those movies.
I don't think that's why they won, though. I mean,
oh, okay. I didn't see one of those movies, and I predicted every one of those winners. I knew that Coda was going to win. I knew that the deaf actor was going to win. In this era right now of Hollywood, of this total inclusion, there is no way that they were not going to give Coda that movie. And there was no way, as much as it made history, it was no surprise to me that that guy won. No surprise at all.
Well, I think it was no surprise because he had won all the other awards.
I understand that. But my point is that their whole thing is, ever since all the controversy in the last couple of years of people of color not being and women not being nominated, when you go through this list, the Oscars are very happy. They're like, no one can complain. We covered everybody here. And if you don't think that there's some, I'm not saying that they rigged the vote, but that's the impression in that voting body now is what are going to be those official, because long after this is forgotten, this is done, those winners will remain as a part of history.
Well, yeah. But
and
I
so
also
those
think
names will there. And I'm not saying they weren't deserving.
No, I know.
I'm just saying, if you look at the winners, it's the most diverse, inclusive list that you could ask for. You've got a female director, which has always been the problem. You've got a best actor as an African American. You've got a best supporting actress as a Hispanic and a lesbian, and you've got a deaf first time best supporting actor. And you've got a movie about a deaf family that's all in subtitles. What more can you ask for if your goal is diversity and inclusion? Tell me where I just listed all the major the winners there. Tell me where that list doesn't check every box.
I know, I'm just saying that I don't think they won to check a box though. I do think that the Academy, they've announced over the recent years that they have taken steps to have more representation throughout the Academy, among their members.
Right. I just read you the list. Doesn't that seem to fit exactly their agenda?
Well, yeah, but it's not, it's like you, right. But I do believe though that those.
It's all right. Look, Emily, I'll give you 4 years.
Okay.
I see it's going to take a while. I'm trying to just present you with facts. And then, in a couple of years, you'll begin.
We'll revisit this.
You'll begin to see the light. And then you'll wind up telling me, did you know what I'm looking forward to? I'm looking forward to the day when you're going to tell me what I just told you. Did you see how they all checked the boxes?
Oh, no.
And I'm going to say, oh.
We'll see if there even is an Oscar.
Well, that's my point.
That remains to be.
Yeah, well, they'll definitely do it till 100. Then we might have to. And here's the thing, too. This is another, and I've brought this up on several occasions about other things in our pop culture, especially. I understand this has been going on for 94 years, right? But, there is a time when some ideas just they're past their time. You know what I mean? And yeah. I'm wondering if for instance, magazines and like Rolling Stone magazine, which is something that I've been a subscriber for years. It's a far cry from what it ever was. It's completely irrelevant now. And they're keeping it alive. It's on life support. I don't even know what it is. I have a lifetime subscription. I would never subscribe to it if I had to renew, but they gave me a lifetime subscription 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So I just get it. I would never get it. I would never pay for it anymore. I literally go through it in 7 minutes. Maybe one name that I recognize and one face, so I don't even know why I get it. I should just tell them no. But the only reason I keep getting it is because I think I've told you this before. The only reason I don't just tell them stop sending it and don't waste my time is because on the mailing label, they have the year that my subscription will lapse.
Ugh.
And now don't forget, this is a lifetime subscription.
Right.
And yet they have a year on there.
So what?
Yeah.
What's your year? How long?
My year is like 1950. Yeah. Rolling Stone has me. They're gonna stop it. In 2053 when I'm 90.
Oh.
Or 89 or 90.
Rolling Stone.
Yeah,
wow,
so they
I don't think you're going to make it past 90.
So yeah, so my goal now is to beat the Rolling Stone prediction.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the only reason I get it is so that
you know what I think, Jim? I think you're going to outlive Rolling Stone.
Oh, yeah. Oh, because on January 8th, I'm calling, 2053 or whatever, I'm calling them up and say you better keep sending this thing.
Yeah.
I'm still alive. Ha ha ha.
Yeah.
So when I saw that number, 20 years ago, I went, ooh, that's creepy. But now I'm like, okay, you have given me reason to get a doctor. Rolling Stone itself.
Giving you motivation to stay alive.
Exactly. But my point is, there are some ideas that at the time, they may have been revolutionary. They may have been right on, and they spoke to us for years, but as time has gone on, they have lost their relevance, they have lost their importance, and they don't really need to be around. And I don't know, maybe the Academy Awards is getting to that point. It's too big of a, still in some people's minds, at least, it's still this, this major event. But as I said before, if the movie business continues to go down this road and alienate, I mean, you're a major film fan, right?
Mm-hmm.
You live in, your favorite movie is The Wizard of Oz. You love movies. You still are clinging to that, that thing. But you have to admit that you don't see movies with the same regularity that you used to. And you have to admit that. And you have to admit that there's lesser films that are moving you and that you're saying, oh my God, I love this movie, right?
Right. But you know what I did? I have to admit. So, and that is a combination. That's a combination of, once I had kids,
right.
Like, it's
I get
not
that.
As easy to just get to the movies. And then, you wait for it to come on and then you forget, like you wait for it to be on streaming and then you lose track.
My point is you wouldn't forget.
Tell you this, for the right things. So I have to admit, when Scream came out, there was
the
a new installment of Scream that came out around the holidays, I think it was.
Yeah.
Maybe it was January, I forget.
Yeah.
And
you would have known before.
So this was during the Omicron surge.
Right.
And I really, really wanted to see it. I mean, I really wanted to see it for many reasons. But I also felt like I wanted to see it in the theater because I was worried that I was going to eventually come across a spoiler, because there's just too much.
Right.
Yeah, information out there.
Yeah.
At your finger, like literally just scrolling through a Facebook feed, I could see a spoiler.
Right.
So my husband and I, because I wasn't ready to go to the movies yet because it was a COVID surge.
Yeah.
We rented out a theater so I could see Scream.
What?
Yes.
What?
Yes. But
what does that even mean?
Well, this is funny. So I didn't even know this existed until I was trying to figure this out. So there was one theater. It's like one of those theaters where you go and you can eat a whole meal on that.
Yeah.
That place, we reached out to them to say, hey, do you guys ever do like private showings, whatever? They literally sent back like a bid, like a here's your proposal. That was an insane amount of money. I mean, it was like $1,200. I'm like, no, we're not doing that. God. That's ridiculous.
Right.
Like my husband thought about it for a second and I was like, absolutely not. Like that's very sweet of you, but like, that's ridiculous. You could donate that money to charity.
Oh my.
So now God. I just dropped the idea. Right. So one day out of the blue, I'm like looking, I'm like thinking maybe I could go at a time, like during the day when the kids are at school and like nobody else is really there. And I can maybe look and see, cause how everyone, you've talked about this on the podcast before, when people book the seats ahead of time maybe I can look and see if one of the theaters, like maybe just right before it's going to, an hour,
nobody
before,
there,
if any seats, if there's nobody there, I'll go.
Right.
So I go on like an AMC Theaters website.
Yeah.
We have one at the mall down the road from us. And I'm scrolling through and I'm looking and I notice this little button. I almost didn't see it. Every single day at 4:30, they have a quote private screening time. that you can select a movie,
right,
and you can, and it's not that much money. And you know, and this must be how, I suppose people probably do this for like birthday parties and stuff.
Right.
But I think in COVID times,
yeah,
they've made this a daily option. It's every day except, I think, Saturday and Sunday.
Right.
So
yeah.
Monday through Friday.
Yeah, because they're like, why not?
4:30, you can book out.
Oh, my God.
And we did that. And it was just the two of us in the theater.
Oh,
you could actually add, I mean, I could have invited 10 of my friends if I was like, okay,
right,
we're in a bubble, whatever.
Right.
So I actually did.
So is it like a couple of concert tickets?
Well, what do you mean? Like you just.
No, my point is the price. Is like if I was going to see the Rolling Stones?
Oh, God, it was much cheaper than going to see the Rolling. I mean, my one ticket for the Rolling Stones cost double what I paid to rent that theater out.
Oh, wow.
But that is the Rolling Stones, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I do, when it's really, really, and I guess this is to, you know, really to speak to the point of, like, we need people making. Now, I'm not saying that the new Scream installment was a great movie.
Right.
But the original Scream was a great movie that I will always remember. I remember going to see it in the theater like it was yesterday, 1996. And I still remember it because I went with a friend, like, the first week it was open. I remember watching that opening scene. I remember turning. It was my roommate turning to her and saying, like, after the first 10 minutes, like, okay, I have to go home now. This is too scary. I'm going to have to leave the theater now. But it had such an impact. And I was young, you know,
right,
that was right in my wheelhouse at that time, right? Because I was young. All of those, Neve Campbell,
right?
Drew Barrymore. I mean, they were all,
yeah,
you know, in my kind of big,
yeah, Courtney Cox,
like in girl, yeah, yeah, and yeah, of that genre. I mean, Courtney Cox is a little older than me, and right, and also Drew Barrymore. And,
yeah,
you know,
but
whatever.
I'm just saying that she was on Friends. Yeah, I mean, she was
huge. Friends was a huge,
yeah,
hit, yeah. And so I did just want to see this, and I never had expectations of it really being that good, but it's just one of those things where I was like, I just want to see it, you know, and so I will. So you can still. Even when life takes over and you don't get to the movies as much, or, you know, for me, I think that if it's something I really want to see, and COVID also made
you
it.
You are Hugh Hefner. You are Hugh Hefner. You are Elvis. You are renting out theaters.
Well, I mean, I think it's become more accessible in COVID times to do that because they have to make it.
Oh,
more
wow. I can't.
Right?
Well, I mean, I can't wait. I mean, I will never let you let this one down. Wow.
Hey, I'm not ashamed. Okay. All I wanted to do was see Scream.
You are now Elvis Armanetti. Same initials.
I have news for you. It probably costs a lot less than your Elton John ticket.
I'm sure it
so
did.
Let's not.
I know it did, but you do have to concede that the idea of you having your own movie theater and walking in, even if it cost much cheaper, which it probably did, of any Elton concert I've seen in the last 15 years,
without a doubt.
Just the idea, though, that you rented out a theater. Oh my God. Did it feel weird when you walked in there? Like, this is our, like, where should we sit?
No, it was pretty awesome. I was happy I had my couple of cocktails.
Like, so did they give you the food?
Yeah, I mean, we ended up not at a food place because that place wanted $1,600.
Yeah, right.
So you
just had like the regular popcorn and.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which is all I want. If I'm going to see Scream, that's what I want. I just need popcorn and.
But where'd you get the cocktails from?
Well, they have bars. You know, Jim, we've talked about this. They have bars in movie theaters.
I haven't been
now.
To a theater.
Even
so
your
long.
Mall, your run of the mill mall.
Yeah, that's true.
Movie
yeah.
theater, they yeah. have bars there now. Yeah. Because they've got to keep up.
Yeah.
You know, the full service.
Place. The alcohol. So, yeah. They have to keep up with the alcoholic millennials.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, it's not even that. No, the millennials don't drink. It's the Generation Xers.
Yeah, right. That's true. Yeah. Well, Well, I'm surprised they don't sell heroin.
No, millennials don't drink because they look at my generation. They're like,
Yeah, no, but they're all into whiskey now. They're all into whiskey and all the other BS, you know.
So, yeah, you know, I made it.
Wow.
There's something worth seeing.
Holy.
There's something worth seeing.
We will rent out a theater.
I'll make it happen.
Oh my God, that's crazy. Yeah. Well, I can't. I, you know what? I, you know, I could talk to you for hours and have, but I can't top that now. That's all. Nope. We're done. Yeah. That's the period on this. That's the period at the end of the sentence.
That's a wrap.
Yeah. Oh my God. I can't. I don't even know where to go. I have to decompress after hearing this. Holy cow! I can't talk about anything right now. I'm gonna have to just go in a room and with the lights out. I'm gonna have to go get pictures of you from 30 years ago. Remember that little sweet girl that I used to know? Yeah. Well, it's actually not 30 years, thankfully. It's 20 years.
No, yeah, not that long. But yeah, well, please don't add 10 years.
But it's longer than 20. I got news for you. When did you start? Oh, we probably worked together. What, in like 90s?
2000. And no,
is that when you started in 2000?
Yep.
Oh, you? Yep. Oh, really?
So we're 20. Well, I thought you were years later. Ago.
Nope, I thought you were a little later than that. It was 2000.
Yep, January of 2000. In fact, right after the Y2K, the infamous Y2K.
Oh, really? So that's when
thought
you...
their bank accounts were going to be emptied and stuff.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's true because I. Yeah, that's probably because I took over in like mid 99. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. 22 years.
22 years. Holy smokes. I just actually, Emmy and I worked together at a public relations firm now, as we say, 22 years ago. And I just went through some old pictures. And when we had our group Christmas party here at my house.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a picture of you wearing my fez from my Shriner's fez.
Oh, yeah.
I can send it to you. It's hilarious.
Yeah, you should.
I saw it. Yeah. So.
Well, now that you have a smartphone, you
yes.
can snap a picture of it on your smartphone.
I could and just send it.
And
yeah.
You can send it
I could
to me.
Text it
just
to you.
That easy, Jim.
Yeah, like the other day on my smartphone, I had a contractor looking at something he has to fix. And so he says, "Well, why don't you just, instead of me coming out, because it doesn't sound like it's a major job, why don't you just take a picture of it and just, send it to my text?"
Yeah.
So I, of course, immediately got afraid because I'm like, oh, my God. And I said, oh, of course, I'll do that in a second. And I'm like, I don't know how to do that. And it's so easy.
It's so easy.
Oh, it's so easy. I tell you, it's amazing. I do actually, now that I have one, I believe that this smartphone thing is going to catch on.
Oh, yeah.
I do. Okay. I can honestly
you're
say
always,
that.
I believe you. You're always.
I'm an early adopter, and
you are. Yeah, always leading the way.
But you know what's so funny is that I am now like it's so funny. Like I'm finding things I never would have thought of that I can do. Like, I mean, I was at the. I think I've always said, when I go to an airport, in the past, I would always have like magazines or newspapers to read.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, now, the other day, I was in the airport, I'm scrolling.
Yep.
And I'm even listening to my Sirius on my headphones while I'm scrolling.
Yep. Oh, you could listen to this podcast.
I got to the airport early. I was, in the gate for like an hour and a half, right?
Mm-hmm.
Went by in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Well, I've been trying to tell you this for years.
Everybody
but, okay.
Has.
I'm glad you finally came around. Yeah.
Well, I'm still, like I said, I'm going to have to, take my blood pressure right now after hearing that story. What happened to that sweet little naive Emily that I used to know? She's renting out theaters.
Listen, it's a pandemic, and I had to see this movie.
Wow.
So,
unbelievable. Yeah. Well, we have talked for, this is now officially the longest podcast I've ever done.
There's no way.
Yeah, I've never done. This is 1 hour and 47 minutes.
Oh, my God.
We have been talking for an hour, but I've been entertained. Hopefully, the folks have too. Emily, thank you so much for your knowledge, your enthusiasm, your opinion, and that last little, bombshell you just dropped. Thank you for your honesty. Wow. Mm-hmm. Even if I have or ever had done that, I would never admit it.
You are welcome.
We'll talk to you soon. Thank you. And wow, if you are listening to this, this is history. After more than 300 podcasts, you have just finished listening to the longest podcast I've done in 306 episodes. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Don't forget, tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and your devotion is much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 306. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen.